Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 6. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me as always is your friend and mine, Mr. John Nicholson. John, how are you, sir?
I'm doing amazing.
You're in Palo Alto this week, right?
Yeah, I am. Meeting out here with the team. Actually, I feel really productive today because I got a blog post out. And even if nothing else gets accomplished today, I always feel so much more productive when I get a new blog out.
Absolutely. I agree. I'm working on one right now as well. I'm hoping to have it done by tomorrow. So hopefully I'll have that same feeling.
I'm looking for it.
So last week I said we started the podcast and we had birds chirping and I was talking about how great the spring was and the weather was getting better. And I came back to Raleigh and it was like 40 degrees. Which to me is absolutely freezing.
Yeah, but I don't think it gets that cold in Houston.
But I guess I shouldn't complain since there's like snow in the entire Midwest right now. But anyway, so we're bringing in this week, we're going to talk about Site Recovery Manager, one of my favorite products for many years. I worked on that for many years myself. And so, yeah, this week we're going to bring in the expert, the subject matter expert on Site Recovery Manager, one of our teammates, GS. You can find him on Twitter at GuruSimran. GS, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So, GS, you've been around VMware in general in the community for many years, even before you came to VMware. Why don't you give us the 5-minute bio?
Yeah, sure. So I started in virtualization in around 2004, 2005. And oddly enough, I started out actually with Microsoft's Virtual PC 2004 product.
Ah.
That was my introduction to virtualization.
Nice.
But yeah, I've been working with VMware stuff since about 2006. And I've spent time as both a customer, spent time with a partner, and now I'm with VMware. And I wanted to work for VMware. Pretty much as soon as I got my hands on the product, I thought, wow, that is a company that I'd like to work for. And the thing that I always find kind of trippy looking back on is that at that point, the only thing that I could see doing for VMware was being in IT, like being VMware IT, you know, because that's all I knew.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, I saw Duncan did a blog post about what tech marketing was. And I was like, wow, that's what I want to do at VMware. You know, a few years passed and here I am. So. Living the dream.
Nice. Yeah, one of the very first VMworld sessions I ever saw was, I think, one of your sessions, actually, on Site Recovery Manager.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, that's cool.
You did a great job, by the way.
Well, I always say when I ask for reviews at the end of sessions, I always say, you know, if you liked the session, please fill out a review. If you didn't like the session, just don't fill out a review.
I usually say on mine, if you like the session, my name is Pete Fletcher. If you didn't like the session, my name is John Nicholson.
Hey now. What did I do?
So yeah, you're here to talk about Site Recovery Manager. And so what I figured, since Site Recovery Manager has been around since 2008, it's definitely one of the most popular products at VMware for many years, just next to vSphere. So there's probably not going to be too many people on this that listens to this podcast that's not familiar with SRM. But just in case there's somebody out there who's been hiding under a rock, why don't you give us the quick explanation of sort of what SRM is and what the use case is for it?
So Site Recovery Manager is a disaster recovery orchestration and automation solution. And it's designed specifically for virtual environments. And the whole idea here is to take what in the past has been a complex, manual, painful process of getting your workloads failed over from one site to another and turn it into something that's simple to work with, orchestrated, automated, repeatable. And to me, one of the coolest things with SRM is you can test your DR plan and test it non-disruptive, which is something that until SRM came around, that just didn't exist. There was no way to test your DR plan, especially in a non-disruptive way.
Sure.
And that's one of those huge things that people, you know, if you've worked at all with DR plans, and you know, Pete and John, you guys know this, the biggest challenge with traditional DR plans is that test. and you usually do it once a year or something like that, it ends up being this nightmare. And so with SRM, you can test it as much as you want every day, every week, you know, whatever makes sense. So
that's something, yeah, I've definitely saw in the field is people who weren't using something like SRM, and really I say something like SRM, SRM really in a lot of ways owns the space. Typically they tested once a year, if at all. And I mean, if you remember life before SRM, it was you had some consultants in and you had your people sit around and you basically wasted an entire quarter building this massive run book, you know, yep. This 3-ring or, you know, 5-inch thick binder.
Mm-hmm.
And then that document never got updated until the next time DR became an issue or there was a failure that could be accounted for. And it was this awkward cycle of no one wanting to commit the resources to continually updating that process.
Because it's so tedious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's tedious. It's the most boring work and you get no value until the disaster actually happens.
Exactly.
But it's, yeah, talking to, you know, organizations that want that ability to know that DR is ready, because that's something that it's a management priority in the fact that people, you know, will lose their jobs potentially if, you know, the DR event doesn't happen. But a lot of people just gamble with that and rely on the fact that I'm only going to be here for 3 or 4 years and something catastrophic is probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a weird space where the, you know, the resources required don't necessarily always line up to personal advancement. And so it's nice to have something that just reduces that to really, you know, 2% of the previous resource commitment.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I completely agree. And I've been on both sides of that. I remember many, many moons ago when I had to build those DR plans myself and then update those, which was very tedious. But then God forbid you ever had to use them. You know, you'd just be, you know, cringing like, oh no, I hope this is current, because it's so there's so much room for human error in that type of functionality, you know, which is what I always loved about SRM is it's completely automated. You build it, you test it, and then you can vet any of the problems, whether it's permissions, you know, whether it's access to servers, what needs to boot first, you know, whether there's a networking issue. You get to completely vet your DR plan before it's actually time that you need it.
Yeah, and I think that's the best part of the value of SRM is, you know, you wrapped it up right there.
And for many years, I remember with SRM, it was like, well, yeah, this is great for DR. You know, it's a DR solution. It's certainly more than DR, in my opinion, right? Because you can also do planned migrations of data centers. I mean,
exactly. And we actually find that almost 40% of customers use SRM not for disaster recovery. You know, they use it for what you were just talking about. They use it for data center migrations. And then we find, you know, even among the group of people that use it for DR, you know, there's disaster recovery, and then there's also disaster avoidance.
Yes.
And when you see something, you see a problem on the horizon, you see, you know, floodwaters rising, power company tells you that you know they're going to have a power outage, you know, whatever that is, the storm coming, and you move your workloads out of the way before that happens. And so having something you've tested, you know how it works, you're prepared for it, you know how long it takes, and you know, having something like that to be able to, you know, bring your workloads down in an organized, orchestrated fashion, you know, no data loss, yep. Minimal disruption, and bring them up at your recovery site quickly and exactly the way that you want them to.
There was a customer, and I'm not allowed to say the name of the customer. They're not a referenceable customer. So for legal purposes, I'll just say that there was a company that provided sort of DR services for folks up in the Northeast. And back in 2012, Hurricane Sandy was coming through. And this customer had SRM. They had a data center in Denver, and then they had their data center in New Jersey. But then they also had Metro Cluster between Manhattan and New Jersey. So they had this synchronously available, you know, zero RPO solution, but they also had DR out to Denver. And so when Hurricane Sandy came through, they had to make this this decision of, do I just completely stay highly available and risk, you know, this hurricane that's coming through the entire Northeast because it was a Category 5 coming through? Or do we take it, you know, do we take the hit and we do this, as you said, disaster avoidance and actually bring everything up on Denver? And turned out to be the best decision they ever made, because when the hurricane came through, it took one of their data centers out completely. They didn't even have access to the data center for months because of the water and flooding and everything. And so it was the right decision for them, and they were able to get their customers up with minimal outage thanks to SRM. So I completely agree. It's disaster recovery as well as disaster avoidance.
The thing that you brought up about stretch clusters or metro clusters and stretch storage will tie in nicely with some of the things that we'll talk about with new features for SRMs.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to dive into the features of 6.1. That's because I left right when 6.1 was coming out, and so I haven't had a chance to play with all those. So I'll certainly be asking you some questions. But yeah, I think that's a good summary of sort of what SRM is. I mean, for most of the folks listening, I'm sure that's old hat to you. But for those of you that are new and you don't know, if you're looking for a disaster recovery solution, you definitely want to look into SRM and take a look. But let's start talking about what's new in the most recent version, which is Site Recovery Manager 6.1.
So there's really three big things in SRM 6.1. So the first one is storage policy-based protection groups. Second one is stretch storage integration and support. And then the last one is some enhancements in terms of NSX compatibility and integration.
Okay.
So first off, talking about storage policy-based protection groups, or SPPGs. So this gets to kind of VMware's future vision of the data center and starting to tie things into policies. And specifically things like storage policies. And then up till now, you've had that ability to, it started in vSphere 5.5. We created that idea of storage policies and gave you that some of that ability to tie those in with VAAI. So getting your array to communicate with vSphere and convey some of the capabilities that it had. You could also use tags for data stores to create those policies. And what we did in SRM 6.1 is we added a new capability to storage policies, which is protecting VMs. So the idea here is that if you want to protect a VM, all that you have to do is associate it with that storage policy and place it onto replicated storage, and everything else on the back end is taken care of. The VM is protected. There's no additional steps you have to take. Everything's all set, and you're ready to go. And where this really ties in well is in environments where they're allowing users the ability to provision VMs. So if they're giving users the ability through something like vRealize Automation or vRealize Orchestrator, they're letting users spin up their own VMs, or they want to give them the ability to protect VMs. A storage policy-based protection makes that really easy because, again, all you have to do is associate it with that policy, place it onto the replicated storage, and you're done.
That's awesome, because I've done it the old way as well. Before you had the SPPG, I did it with the tagging, and I actually used a little bit of PowerShell, a script that I would actually put on my server that would check frequently if there were new virtual machines added, and then it would go ahead and put those into the protection group for you using PowerCLI. But this is now done completely without having to use PowerCLI. It's just done with SPPG?
Exactly. And all you have to do is you create this new kind of a protection group. So you create a storage policy-based protection group. When you create it, you associate it with a policy. And then the other work that you have to do is you create that policy and you tag data stores with that policy, those replicated data stores. And at that point, everything's all ready to go. And the only thing that you have to do is either when you provision a VM or when you do a storage vMotion of a VM, there's that window. If you haven't played around with storage policies, if our listeners haven't played around with storage policies, there's that window when you're selecting what data store you want to place something on. That drop down right above that, where you select that storage policy and it shows you the storage that's compatible with it, place the VM onto there and you're all set.
And so once you place it on there, then you don't have to actually go into SRM and add it to the protection group?
Exactly. Previously, with calling them, the engineers call them legacy protection groups, which always sounds a little bit scary to me because I think of legacy as old,
right,
or no longer used. But the two other types of protection groups, so vSphere replication protection groups and array-based replication protection groups, with those, you would replicate the VM, however, either with the array-based replication, place it onto a replicated storage, or vSphere replication, configure replication for it. And then after you do that, you have to go into SRM, edit the protection group, add that VM to the protection group, and then configure protection for it.
Right.
So there's three steps that you have to do, whereas with the SPPGs, it's just associating it with the policy, placing it onto the replicated storage, and you're done.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So I guess my question is you know, since vSAN obviously works with SPBM and you can have tags associated with that, you could have different policies that then would map to different protection groups within SRM.
Yeah, you can have different policies that map to, yeah, different policies that map differently. The one thing for right now is that storage policy-based protection groups just work with array-based replication, so they don't currently work with vSAN.
Okay, so for vSAN, I would go through set up vSphere replication.
Exactly.
But you could, if you wanted to, use PowerCLI with vSAN, and you can still automate that process yourself.
Oh, definitely. And one of the other things that we have with SRM that we introduced in SRM 5.8 is there's a vRealize orchestrator plugin for SRM as well as a vRealize orchestrator plugin for vSphere replication.
Nice.
And you can use both of those together to Ben Meadowcroft, who's the former PM for SRM, who was on the show last week,
right,
has an awesome blog post and video of this where he sets up vSphere replication on a group of VMs and creates a protection group, adds them to a protection group, and adds that protection group to a recovery plan, all using vRealize Orchestrator. So there's definitely still, even if you're using vRealize vSphere replication, there's lots of orchestration options that you have there as well.
That's really cool that you've got all these different options. I mean, we've got Orchestrator, we've got PowerCLI, we've got vRealize automation. There's so many different tools, I guess, you get to work with within VMware for automating different actions.
Yeah, and especially with SRM having those, lots of different ways of tying in and accomplishing the same things, depending on what you're more comfortable with, what works for your environment.
Yep.
It's options are always good.
Oh yeah. And of course they're all testable too. Cause when you kick off your plan, I always love the fact that, with your testing, you can do your non-disruptive testing. You can tweak all of your settings and make sure that any scripting that you're going to use, even if you're incorporating scripts into your recovery plan, it's all testable beforehand, so you know exactly that it's going to work. That's always been my favorite part.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So cool, that's policy-based management. Tell me some more. Now, this is something that I'm interested in because I did some work with Stretch Clusters. So tell me a little bit about this Stretch Cluster support.
Yeah, so Stretch Clusters and SRM, up until SRM 6.1, had always been an either-or thing. You could either use a Stretch Cluster or you could use SRM.
Right.
And you couldn't use both. And there are pluses and minuses. I mean, prior to 6.1, there's pluses and minuses to both of them. With with a Stretch Cluster, you had that really quick RTO because you were basically using HA for the recovery.
Yep.
And you also were gaining that flexibility of being able to have a zero downtime disaster avoidance. If one of your sites was threatened, like in the case that you were talking about, New York, New Jersey.
Right.
If something was just impacting one of those sites, you can demotion those workloads from one site to another, which is obviously non-disruptive to your workloads.
Yep.
Some of the downsides, though, to Stretch Clusters were that because you're using HA and you're not using an orchestration tool like SRM, how those VMs recovered from that wasn't there's not a whole lot in the way that you had of control over how those VMs came back up. There's three different, I think they're called priorities within HA of how you how HA recovers VMs.
Yep.
But really all that is just when it starts those VMs. So it's going to start the high ones first, and then as soon as it's done starting the high ones, it starts the medium, and then it starts the low.
Yeah, it's just a power on. It doesn't have VM tools where it's waiting and there's dependencies, and it's not true
exactly.
Sequencing.
Exactly. And I've actually talked with somebody who works for VMware now, but was a customer who operated one of these environments. And one of the things that he said was that he had about 400 VMs in his environment. And when he would run a test and basically take one of his sites down and bring them all up at the other site, they would all come up in about 10 or 15 minutes. And then he would spend the next 2 to 4 hours restarting VMs to get all of his applications working.
Yeah, because the smaller the virtual machine, the quicker it's going to boot. And so if you've got some database server that's bigger, it's going to take longer to boot than these front-end servers that are going to be accessing the database server. And so it could
exactly.
be a situation where your dependent servers boot before the servers that need to be up first. So yeah, no boot sequencing has always been a drag for high availability.
Yeah. And then one of the other things with that is, and I talked just a few seconds ago about it, is testing. And we hit on that a lot just talking about SRM. But with using a Stretch cluster for availability, the other downside is that there's no way to non-disruptively test that. The only way to test the functionality of a stretched cluster is to take one site down.
Yep.
And bring it down hard. I mean, because otherwise you're not really testing it. So, you know, you're basically, you know, you're talking about like pulling power plugs to your hosts or, you know, power plugs to a rack or something like that and seeing what happens. And that's not to say that if you're using a stretch cluster that you shouldn't test, you know, you definitely should test it because you want to know how it's going to work, but just understand that's going to be disruptive.
My favorite example of a server that needed to be tested was a case of a server that some of the boot files actually had become corrupt, and the server had been running for 2 years, and the backups always came up green. I mean, it had been backed up correctly, been replicated, but if you even tried to reboot that server, it never would boot. The boot files were corrupt. And that's the kind of thing that having the ability to test that, and this is something that you could vMotion it back and forth between, you know, a stretch site, but that's the kind of stuff that having the granular testing is really key on catching.
Yeah, exactly. And so the thing that you get with, in SRM 6.1, you know, we talked about it there, it was kind of this either or thing. You know, you could use SRM, and the reason for it was that a stretched cluster is a single vCenter concept, and SRM is a two vCenter concept. You have to have a vCenter at both sites. So there wasn't really any way to blend the two of them, you know, easily to blend the two of those together until 6.1. And what enabled that was in vSphere 6, we introduced this idea of cross vCenter vMotion.
Yes.
So basically what we do in SRM 6.1 is we have that stretch storage underneath. So we've got the special capability from all the different array vendors that offer that ability for synchronized storage and presenting those LUNs to the hosts on both sites as read-write. And we present that storage up to the hosts in both sites, the separate vCenters, separate SRM servers, the whole thing. And now what we can do is we can orchestrate our disaster avoidance. So you can use SRM to orchestrate your vMotion of VMs from one site to another, and SRM is going to respect all the same priority groups and dependencies and everything that you establish for disaster recovery. If you do a planned migration, it will respect those and move those VMs according to those rules and things that you've laid out, which again is a really nice feature, because with a normal stretched cluster, if you think about a disaster avoidance scenario where you want to vMotion 400 VMs from one site to another, either you're going to sit there and try and, you know, figure out how to group them and, you know, vMotion them over in chunks, or you select all 400 of them and vMotion them all at the same time and just let vCenter sort it out.
Yeah.
But with SRM, you've got that ability to move them all over in the same orchestrated fashion that anything else would be. And you have, in the case of a disaster, you have the ability for SRM to handle the recovery the same way that it normally would. Again, relying on all those dependencies and priority groups that you've established, and bring all of your workloads up the way that you want them to.
That's interesting thinking about, because you could actually have cases where you would want different orders that you would vMotion. So for instance, you'd want to vMotion an application group all at the same time, ideally, to reduce the latency between, say, the web and the backend database server. But from a boot order perspective, you want all of your database servers coming up first before the next. So you actually would have, I guess, different orders that you would prefer from a vMotion migration perspective than necessarily a cold boot failure scenario.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. But usually, in general, they kind of work together. You know, if you think about, you know, your typical three-tier architecture, you've got your database servers, your app servers, and your web servers. If you set those up within SRM, you know, usually the way that you'd want to have those grouped would be, you know, maybe your database servers are in priority one, your app servers are in priority group two, and web servers in priority group three. And then within those, maybe you have some dependencies, but probably not. You know, usually the databases come up together, and so from a vMotion standpoint, it will vMotion the database servers at the same time, then the app servers, and then the web tier. And when we talk about from a networking standpoint, I can't talk about it in a ton of detail, but when we talk about the next feature in SRM, the integration with NSX 6.2, they've got some cool stuff there that helps with some of those traffic flows and making that work better.
That would make sense. You'd want all the web servers to come over at the same time so you can flip the BGP route for that whole front-end subnet, and the load balancers flip over the primary and the GSLB config.
Exactly.
So I have one question then, because I know so many stretch clusters, these asynchronously replicated clusters, have distance limitations, limited by the speed of light, and so the distance for the stretch clusters are usually around, I think the max is like 200 kilometers. But there's
I've heard is 100 kilometers or 60 miles. It's basically around 5 milliseconds of latency.
So with vCenter vMotion though, that doesn't have a distance limitation, does it?
Well, so the thing to clarify is there's vSphere 6 introduced a number of different enhancements to vMotion. So the specific one that we're talking about here is cross vCenter vMotion.
Ah, okay.
So in that case, what we're doing is you've got storage that both of those that hosts and both of those vCenters can see, and we're moving a VM. You know, we're growing that boundary. Previously, the boundary for vMotion had been a cluster within a vCenter, and then we eventually got to the point where we were able to do vMotion's cross cluster within a vCenter. And so this is just taking it one step further, and now you can do a vMotion between a cluster in one vCenter and a cluster in a different vCenter.
That is very cool.
And then the other thing I think you were asking about is there's this other idea that we introduced, which is a long-distance vMotion.
Yes.
And in long-distance vMotion, what long-distance vMotion is really a X vMotion where it's not – a regular vMotion is just moving the compute and memory of a VM, you know, the storage stays the same. And then in an X vMotion, you're moving the compute and the memory and the storage of the VM all at the same time. And so that's a long distance vMotion is taking all three of those things and moving them from one site to another. And obviously that's the problem or the concern or issue with that from a disaster recovery standpoint is you're talking about replicating data.
Right.
So, you know, if you're talking about moving a 10 gig VM, sure, maybe you could move, you know, 5 of those or 10 of those relatively quickly.
Sure.
But if you're talking hundreds, you know, that unless you've got the biggest pipe in the world, that's, you know, not going to work very well.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So one of the last thing that, again, the difference between traditional stretch cluster and SRM is SRM also provides the ability to test your recovery plan. And so you can get that as well using SRM 6.1 with stretch storage is you now have the ability, if your storage provider supports taking snapshots of a stretched LUN, you have that ability to test your recovery plan as well, non-disruptively. So getting that benefit too.
It's great because so many years back when I would do SRM sessions, it would be, like you said earlier, the conversation of, you need to decide what use case is, you know, best for you. Do you need this disaster recovery solution with testing, you know, orchestrated testing and true boot sequencing, or do you want just zero RTO, the high availability? And so, you know, these are your factors that you need to consider when choosing a product. But now it seems as though there's no reason to make a decision anymore. It's just it's all in SRM.
Yeah. And there still is the option to do what you talked about with the customer you mentioned, and you know, that had the two sites close together with the stretched cluster in New York and New Jersey, and then protecting both of those sites to a third site with SRM. So, you know, that option still exists as well. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So tell us what's new in terms of integration with VMware NSX.
So the integration with NSX is in a large part enhancements to NSX. And just how SRM can benefit from those. So NSX 6.2 took NSX from a single vCenter concept and grew it out into a multi vCenter concept.
Right.
So prior to 6.2, if you wanted to use NSX with SRM, the issue that you ran into is that you'd have two NSX instances. You have one each at your two sites. And anytime that you made a change to one, you would need to somehow get that change made at your other site. And you know, there were some scripts and things that were created for that, or you could do it manually, but it wasn't a unified concept. And so in 6.2, we now have this idea of a primary NSX manager and secondary NSX managers. And so you can have, you know, a primary at your protected site and a secondary at your recovery site, and they'll sync changes between them so that you no longer have to worry about keeping two sides of that environment in sync.
It's little things like that that, you know, I feel like really increase adoption, not having to either make manual actions or leverage a higher level orchestration layer to create policies. I'm really excited about that being spread across, you know, more things, and as we've seen over time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why SRM was created in the first place, right? So we can get rid of the manual runbooks where we don't have to update things every time, right? And this is the same thing. Anytime a change is made to the network, you don't want to have someone, some human, manually make the updates on the other side. So yeah, having this completely incorporated and integrated is perfect.
Yeah, it goes back to even like the distributed switch, you know, why we came out with it, because we remember what happened when you try to vMotion a VM and, oh, that network doesn't exist there. You can't do that.
Or you have an underscore in the name on this host.
Oh, yes, yes. Capitalization errors impacting vMotion. No, I remember that.
So the other thing that enables is a concept called a universal logical switch. And so the way that you could think of a universal logical switch is a switch that exists, a virtual switch that exists in two different vCenters, but those two switches are connected to each other by a virtual wire. So that really enables and enhances things like where we were talking before about stretch storage and, you know, the ability to vMotion a VM from one vCenter to another. One of the things that you need with that is the ability for that VM's IP address to not have to change.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that network needs to exist at both of those sites. And so this feature in NSX makes that process a whole lot easier, because we now have that, you know, the same network in two different vCenters. And from where SRM ties into this is part of the process in SRM is mapping your resources from one site to another. You need to tell SRM, you know, a VM that's connected to this network at my protected site needs to be, when I recover it at my recovery site, it needs to be connected to this other network. So with NSX 6.2, if you're using those universal logical switches, SRM will see that you're using that universal logical switch and doesn't require a mapping for that. And where that, again, the biggest place that we see a benefit to that is in environments that are highly dynamic. And, you know, kind of all these features in some ways tie together. We get back to storage policy-based protection groups, where we make protecting VMs really easy in environments that are dynamic, you know, where workloads are being spun up and spun down on a frequent basis, to give people the ability to, you know, NSX gives you the ability to spin up networks easily as well. And you don't want to have to worry about, you know, did the mapping for this get created when, you know, I spin up a new network and I spin up a bunch of VMs and place them on there and I want them protected. You know, you don't want to have to think about getting those things mapped as well.
Exactly.
So we take care of that for you.
Well, and previously we had to try to do a lot of stuff with DNS for that, but there's underlying infrastructure and management components that have to come up before that. And so solving that challenge by being able to abstract that that subnet and make sure it's visible end to end is pretty cool.
Yeah. And this part I don't know as much about, but there's also this idea of now of a universal logical router. And that gives you the ability to choose how traffic is routed out of two sites, you know, routed into and out of two sites. So you can, we were talking before about moving around, you know, three-tier applications and, you know, failing over, you know, one of those tiers from one site to another.
Yep.
So that universal logical router does a lot in terms of how it impacts the flow of traffic into and out of those two sites and those different tiers. And there's a great session from VMworld last year from one of my colleagues in the NSBU, John Whitman. I don't remember who he did it with, but he's got some cool demos of utilizing the universal logical router, universal logical switch, and SRM, and failing over parts of a three-tier application. First, failing over just the web tier, and then, you know, failing over the other tiers, and, you know, showing how NSX and SRM fit together and really enhance the whole, you know, DR picture as well as the availability picture for applications on VMware.
Awesome. So I had a question because I'm not very familiar with the vSphere replication side of it. I've always used array-based replication coming from a storage vendor. So just curiosity, what are some of the key differences from a customer perspective if I was looking at this and trying to make some decisions between going with an array-based replication versus vSphere replication?
I actually wrote up a whole blog post documenting all of these differences, but in the kind of in a nutshell, I mean, some of the big ones that you have to think about. First off is vSphere replication is included in Essentials Plus licensing and higher. So it's something that if you've got an Essentials Plus license, you already have, you're entitled to use vSphere replication. So
sure.
You don't have to work with your array vendor to either license anything or enable something, things like that.
Okay.
The other thing is that vSphere replication is VM level replication. So whereas with array-based replication, you're usually talking about it being one level or data store level replication.
Yes.
And you know, both of them work for different things, but the vSphere replication just provides more in the way of flexibility in that you can pick just individual VMs. You don't have to worry what storage they're located on. And they work with any storage that is supported by vSphere is supported by vSphere replication. And it doesn't require similar storage at the target site.
Okay.
From an RPO standpoint, vSphere replication provides a minimum RPO of 15 minutes and up to 24 hours. If you're replicating, if you're using vSphere replication to and from a vSAN, with vSphere replication, we can actually get that RPO down to 5 minutes.
Ah, yes.
And obviously, you know, with array-based replication, obviously you're going to have the ability to do synchronous replication, which is effectively an RPO of zero.
Sure.
So, you know, that's a difference. vSphere replication also doesn't support inter-VM consistency groups. So if you have a group of VMs that need to be replicated at the same point in time, that's not currently something that vSphere replication supports.
Okay.
We're finding that less and less applications require that. So it's, you know, I would, if you think your application requires that, I'd suggest digging into it a little bit and confirming that that really is the case.
Yeah.
But you know, that is another difference.
Oh yeah. I was just going to say, I think you and I have talked about this. I mean, fundamentally that's a really dangerous and bad application design. Cause that means if you try to restore one server from backup, you know, you're in a position to where something bad's going to happen.
Agreed.
And so,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah, and you know, not just restore one. Yeah, I mean, restore one application, or you know, the only way to back up your application would be if you backed up all of the parts of that application at the exact same time. Which I don't know of any backup solutions that support that idea.
Yeah. So.
Put them on the same Linux snap is pretty much your only option at that point.
Exactly. Yeah, and that ties in nicely to, you know, another feature that vSphere replication offers over array-based replication, which is VSS QSing as well as VR6, some level of Linux file system QSing.
Ah.
But again, you know, that's another one of those things where it has that capability, but do you really need that? You know, most applications these days are fine coming up in a crash-consistent state.
True.
You know, so, again, yeah. You know, just use that if you need it.
If you still have SQL 2005 running,
yeah,
you should. You know, that's something you need to worry about. You're right. Like I noticed when SQL went to 2008, you could generally just randomly crash the VMs and you quit having to the log replace and sort out fine.
Yep.
Right.
Two things that came up that I didn't really realize until recently about vSphere replication was the compression that was introduced in 6. So if you're while the granularity of vSphere replication is what, 1 megabyte block, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
I mean, which is larger than some arrays and smaller than some arrays. I mean, there's some out there that I think are 15 megabyte blocks. So, but that is compressed. It uses Speedy or something. That was one thing. And then the other thing that came up at Storage Field Day when someone asked Christos and he got the fun moment of saying, "I wrote that code."
Right, right.
was how RPO is calculated. So traditionally, when you go to an array and you say, "I want a 15-minute replication," what it does is it takes a snapshot every 15 minutes, and then you add the time for the data transfer. And so even though it says 15-minute RPO, you might really be 18 or 20-minute. The RPO with vSphere replication is you start getting alarms if it violates that 15 minutes on traditional vSphere replication or that 5 minutes on vSAN. So really, on vSAN, you might be getting a 3-minute. Or on just regular vSphere replication, you might be getting a 12 or a 10 minute.
Yeah.
It's you start getting alarms when it's failing to deliver 15 minutes.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, that's a great point about vSphere replication is that when you set that RPO setting, it will meet or exceed that.
Yeah, and it'll kind of pseudo stagger. You don't have to go and schedule, because previously, if you've worked with manually setting replication to try to hit specific intervals, and you kind of had to balance, well, this VM needs a really low one, but this one needs a longer time period because there's a lot of change. And rather than have to manually set that, there's some intelligence in it managing, figuring out how to hit fundamentally what are business SLAs.
Yeah, vSphere replication will do all the scheduling for that, based on the history that it sees of how much data it's replicating for individual VMs and how often it's having to replicate that. It'll schedule it all out so that it meets all of those RPOs, and it doesn't end up in the position where, like, it doesn't kick, if everything was replicating every hour, it's not going to kick off all of those replications all on the hour and clog up your pipe. It's going to spread those out to make sure that it meets that RPO for everything.
And it does not use VM snapshots unless you're doing VSS, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that's a good thing to point out is sometimes people think that vSphere replication is using snapshots. It's not. It uses a different technology that they built specifically for vSphere replication. And yeah, it's not using a snapshot unless you do the VSS QSA. The other time that you'll see a snapshot with vSphere replication is vSphere replication supports creating up to 24 point in time replicas. So, giving you that ability to roll back, and you can adjust, how many of those you want to keep per day, or, how many you want to keep per day and how many days you want to keep them, just keeping that total to 24. And the way that those are stored is they're stored as snapshots at the target site. So your production VM isn't running off of snapshots, but when you recover it at the target site, it will appear with all of those, that snapshot chain. You can restore back to whatever, wherever you want, and then just delete whatever snapshots you don't want to use.
That's really nice. Okay, so I think that's a pretty good introduction to SRM for those that are new to SRM, but also those that are new to 6.1. So awesome. What about vendor support? I know you guys got all the big players. There's EMC, NetApp, HP, IBM, Dell, all those. But what about some of the new startups out there? How many altogether do we have support for in terms of storage vendors that are supporting SRM?
To be honest, I don't know that number off the top of my head, but I have a slide in one of my decks that I call my NASCAR slide. has all of the storage vendors. And it seems like at this point, pretty much any storage vendor that's out there, and really anybody that even provides storage, Nutanix is one of the recent companies that added an SRA.
Oh, okay.
But, Pure, Nimble, any of the newer companies, I believe, I'm not positive about Tejal, but almost any company, if you have a storage vendor that works with VMware, more than likely they have an SRA. So
yeah,
they have, and if for some reason you don't have an SRA, then you always have vSphere replication you can use.
Exactly. Yeah.
To utilize SRM.
Cool. Well, one thing for sure, I want to get a copy of that blog that you mentioned that you did on the differences between vSphere replication and array-based replication. I'll also leave on the show notes the link to the compatibility guide. So if anyone wants to see exactly what support is there, you can do that as well.
Great.
Great. John, anything else? We have any other questions before we let GS get out of here? I know he's been a great guest so far.
No, that was brilliant.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, GS, you are easily accessible on Twitter at Guru Simran, if I'm correct. And I'll leave a link to that. I'm butchering the pronunciation. Apologies.
Yeah, no worries. That's my first name. And I got it, whenever I started on Twitter, I think in like 2008 or 2009. And in hindsight, I've thought, I should have done something around, people know me as GS, not as Guru Simran.
Yeah.
So I actually have reserved, I guess is a way to put it, I've reserved the Twitter handle, just call me GS.
Oh, I love it.
But I just haven't, I've thought about switching and I just haven't quite done it yet. So
that's really funny. Yeah, you should. Is there a way to use both of them on the same, have them pointing both to one Twitter account?
You can't really do that, but you can actually switch a Twitter account. Like you can change the name of your Twitter account to something else and retain all of your followers and everything like that.
So. That makes
sense. I didn't know they did that. Okay.
Yeah, all you have to do is just go in and change the name. And if the name is available, then you can use it.
Very cool.
So.
I love it. Well, yeah, so I appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we can get you back on to talk about some more goodness within the storage and availability business unit.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Thank
awesome.
You.
All right. All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Twitter by going to Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're bringing in Duncan Epping to talk about some virtual SAN. And so until then, bye for now. You guys ready to go to Austin?
I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, let's get some barbecue.
Absolutely. I'm
dying. They got Stubbs. There's a V-Mug that week, too.
Yeah.
Is there barbecue at the V-Mug?
I don't know. Rawlingson's going to be there, so we should go, heckle.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. Ian Vaughn, the keynote.
Yeah, we should get rubber mics or something and throw them at him.
Yes! Done deal. I'm going on Amazon right now. Rubber mics.
I'm sure they're on Amazon.
Awesome.